It's the question humans have been asking since the beginning of time. What happens after you die?
I hope you're not asking me because I don't know the answer.
Oh, okay. Well, good. We're starting strong. Some cultures believe death was just the beginning, a chance to wipe the slate clean and be reborn for an eternity in utopia, but not before a little mummification and magic.
Well, of course, you got to sprinkle those in first before you go anywhere.
Pepper in some fun, you know?
Yeah.
A little magic. Hi, everyone, and welcome to Rituals, a Spotify original from Parcast. I'm Em Schultz.
And I'm Christine Schieffer.
And every week, we'll explore the evolution of spiritualism and the occult through stories, practices, and the impact on modern culture. And today, we're talking about the Book of the Dead.
I cannot wait for this topic.
I am very interested. I unfortunately hadn't heard about it, but we are talking about the afterlife. We're talking about spells and passwords that might have helped you out once you die. I feel like I could use a few of those. So let's crack into it.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all. But it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
Hola.
Hello. This call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow. Ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow. Now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Your brain needs support, and new Ollie Brainy Chews are a delightful way to take care of your cognitive health. Made with scientifically backed ingredients like Thai ginger, L-theanine, and caffeine, Brainy Chews support healthy brain function and help you find your focus, stay chill, or get energized. Be kind to your mind and get these nootropic chews at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
All right, Christine, it is the age old question. So I got to ask you.
Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
What were you, first of all, before, what do you think? What were you told happens to you when you die?
Well, like any innocent, overly sensitive 3-year-old child, I was inundated with information that I will take one misstep and end up in a fiery pit of brimstone. So, you know, at Catholic school, that's the vibe we got. Is, you look at someone the same sex as you in the wrong way, your shorts are too short, whatever it might be, many thousands of possible missteps and you're in hell. So that's what I was taught.
Uh-huh.
I'm definitely over it, and I'm definitely not mentally scarred.
I was going to say, you're not at all religiously traumatized. Got it.
No, not even a little bit. What were you taught, though?
What's weird is, like, I've talked about this so many times, pretty much everywhere. So everyone just, like, say it in unison with me. But I was raised by multiple people who all followed very different religions. And so
right.
I was kind of just
a mishmash.
I was given every answer. And I think the mutual understanding was like, I don't know, pick one. Like,
yeah, which doesn't really lend itself to, like, this is for sure what's going to happen, you know?
Yeah, which, like, that's kind of the weird part about it, is that I never felt comfort in any one particular thing. But I did always find comfort in, like, I was very lucky to be surrounded by people who felt like, no matter what your belief is, like, at the end of the day, it's just a belief. Like, no one knows.
Right.
So when it comes to the afterlife, I think the overarching theme I've always been told is that there is an afterlife. We just don't know how it works.
Mm-hmm. I mean, I think that's probably the healthiest way to look at it as a child.
I'm very lucky. I'm very privileged to not have religious trauma. Yeah, but I mean, what do you think actually happens when we die then?
Well, you know, I don't obviously know, but I think I've taken a full 180 from what I was taught in that I pretty much just believe a more woo-woo kind of way of thinking in that we die and we are perhaps reborn to learn lessons and kind of try and fix bad patterns, that kind of thing. I'm big in the belief of like we come back to learn a specific lesson, that kind of thing.
I agree with you. I'm definitely on board with the reincarnation. Obviously, definitely believe in ghosts. I've said this before too, but my mom always taught me that she never told it to me as fact. She was just like, I don't know, this is how I see it. And I think because her voice was maybe the loudest or it was such a nice sentiment, I've just always rolled with it. But she always calls it her bubble,
right,
where she kind of thinks that her people in our either family line or our friend group or just people who mattered or had some sort of soul connection to you, when they pass on, they stay ghosts while they're waiting for you. And when everyone kind of dies at the same time and we're all like, they do a head count. They're like, okay, we're all dead now. they all like make a call on like, is this it for us? And do we move on? Or do we come back and like reincarnate as different characters?
In different relationships and stuff. I mean, that's a really cool idea. And I think that does go hand in hand with a lot of people's beliefs that we come back in each other's lives, that kind of thing.
Yeah, I love that. And also, she would refer to them sometimes as ghosts and sometimes as like guardian angels, but it's always people looking out for you who actually are invested in you doing well. So
yeah, they're like, hey, I'm counting on you to like, get please, this right.
Please don't fuck this up. Okay. But no, I think that's, again, that I would never press that opinion on anyone, but I do think it's very sweet.
I love that idea.
You know, everyone's still around all the time.
It's comforting. Yeah.
So, Christine, when you die one day, unfortunately, what? That is inevitable,
no.
I think.
No!
I would love to be told otherwise. But do you have any particular wishes on what would happen?
I sure do hope I don't die and then all my Catholic nun teachers are like, told you so, because that would be really unfortunate.
Well, do you have any wishes for the afterlife? Do you have any wishes for like a funeral? Like what you would like to come out of?
Oh, are you taking notes?
I am taking notes, actually. I would like to know what you would like, because otherwise I'm going to make a lot of weird calls. So
I mean, I think I don't expect anything less. You know, my biggest hope for the afterlife is that we are reunited with people and pets and loved ones that we've lost in general. That's my biggest hope. And from what I've heard, people with near-death experiences, that kind of thing, that I've heard that we do reunite, we do enter, you know, a very happy, so to speak, place. And so I do hope that that's kind of what awaits us, kind of a place of comfort and reconnection with people we've lost and pets we've lost. And I've heard that that does happen. You know, I try to tell myself anyway that that's what's going to happen to make myself feel better. As for a funeral, one of my biggest fears in life is people feeling bad or sad. So I don't know how to reconcile that with a funeral. I'm like, don't be sad. I mean, I want you to be sad because I died, you know, but don't be sad. Don't cry.
Okay, so we're going to take that audio excerpt out and we're going to play that at your funeral. Got it. That's what I just heard.
Yeah. I don't know.
Are you like a burial kind of person? Or are you a
no? I just cremation? Cremate me, man. Cremate me. Cremate me.
What do you want done with your ashes? This is not legally binding, by the way. You can just like tell me what you just for fun.
I don't know. I don't really have any plans. I try not.
You know what's going to happen though, because you're just going to be put in a really pretty vase or something, and then accidentally goodwilled. Like you got.
Oh, but that might be fun. A little adventure, you know. What do you want? I don't even know what you want. I just want to be cremated. I don't want to be buried. That freaks me out. And yes, I know I'll be dead and the whole thing. But, oh, they have those cool body farms, too, where you can be, like, recomposted into
that's,
you know.
Feels very you. I would have assumed you just want to become a tree or something.
I think maybe that's the way to go for me. Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know. I feel like I just assume I'd rather be cremated. I always grew up with my mom always talking about how she never wanted to be buried because her dad died at a really young age. And he's buried in Florida. And she's like, no one ever goes to see
him.
Sure. And so I think her fear has always been, as a social butterfly, she's like, I don't want to be put somewhere where people...
Somewhere.
Yeah. So I think we've both always kind of had that in our mind of like, this was kind of my idea, and I think she's hopping on board, is to be cremated and have like little amounts divvied out to all the people who mattered, and they can decide what to do with those ashes.
See.
So like my mom wants to be divvied up amongst like her best friends and her family members, and like if they go on trips to like bring her with them.
Well, that's nice. Something.
I need you to be proud of me though, because for a while she was dead set on me turning her into a diamond, and then wanted me to wear her. So
I remember, and I have never stopped thinking about that, and it cracks me up every time.
We're making progress.
You have made big progress in that regard.
Well, because then I was like, what if I just turned you into like a really cool piece of art? And she was like, or like, what if I made you into like a little pebble? Like, they can do anything with ashes.
Mm-hmm.
They can turn you into a vinyl record. They can turn you into fireworks. But so I was like, what if I was turning into like a little like happy wish stone? And she was like, you would lose me in 5 seconds. Don't do that.
That's what I worry about with the jewelry. I'm like, I lose every piece of jewelry I've ever owned. I don't think I could be trusted.
Well, as for a funeral, I actually was literally talking to my mom last night about what she would like, what her request. It was so weird because I had just had this conversation with her, and then seconds later opened up these notes. And I was like, oh, wow, how the world
how
collides. But I did say, like, if you were to have a funeral today, what would you want? Like, is there a dress code? Like, what's the theme?
Is there a dress code?
And she said that she wants everyone to wear bright red lipstick. Everyone.
Okay.
Everyone. I think everyone.
Oh my God.
She's known in her circles for, I've never seen that woman in 30 years of life. I've never seen her without.
You don't know what her real lip shade is.
I kind of think it's stained on there at this point.
It's just red.
That was her one request. She was like, and also maybe rhinestones. So.
Okay. Don't give her too much leeway. We're going to get into the bling pretty soon.
Anyway. We've talked too long on this, I'm sure. But in case anyone needs to know what Christine or my mother's wishes are, there you have it. And now that we're talking about the Book of Dead, just to bring it back, do you know anything about the Book of Dead?
You know, I do know. Well, I've heard a little bit about the Book of the Dead. And as you know, I have a very deep fascination with Egyptian history. And I think I've just absorbed some of this knowledge from every museum I've been to. I mean, I even went to the art museum the other day here in Cincinnati, and they had sarcophagi, mm-hmm. and we were reading about, which again, like, this is probably 2 days before I opened these notes, and we were reading all about the different talismans they put into, you know, with the mummified person, all that. So I have like a vague understanding, but not, you know, the full history of it.
If that's vague, then whatever's less than that is what I knew. Because I really, when I first heard of the Book of the Dead, I unfortunately ran with my whitewash pop culture. And so
sure.
I was like, oh, Beetlejuice has a Book of the Dead.
Oh, I see.
The handbook.
Sure.
Then there's like Hocus Pocus and the Mummy and all that. That was my only frame of reference before I ever started really learning about it.
Mm-hmm.
I'd say I also have a vague, in college, I took a class and I remember learning about it a little bit. Anyway, shout out and apologies at the same time to Egyptian history and culture for not being represented well.
Yeah, you've had it tough as far as white folks turning your, you know, actual serious history into our favorite film.
A farce. A fun little farce. But anyway, now let's do our best to make up for lost time.
Sure.
And teach
Would
a
love
bit.
To.
So we'll go over what the Book of the Dead is in a minute. But first, again, want to quickly go over what it's not.
Oh, okay. This is probably even more helpful almost.
Well, it's not any of the things I thought it was.
Okay.
As a child.
Okay.
It's not what you might have seen in the 1999 film, The Mummy, starring some of our favorites, Brendan Fraser. And oh God, what's her name? Rachel something.
I was just thinking
she's
about
a queer
this
icon.
Movie.
I'm embarrassing everybody I know right now.
We'll insert it later. We'll be like, I don't know her name.
Microsoft Sam. Rachel something. But it's not what you might have seen in that movie. It doesn't summon ghosts, and it was never used for anything on Earth. It only works in the afterlife. Weiss. Rachel Weiss. Thank you.
Rachel Weiss.
Thank you, Parcast.
Thank you, Gitu. Always coming through for us.
Coming in hot all the time. By the way, shout out everyone. Today, Gitu's sweatshirt. It's spelled like Jay-Z, but it's lazy. And
has developed a new
personality.
New personality.
My whole identity is wanting that sweatshirt.
Old
now.
Personality, new wardrobe to fit
right.
said personality.
Okay, so the Book of the Dead, it does not summon ghosts, and it is never used for anything on Earth. The book is only meant to work in the afterlife.
Okay, that's good to know.
And the Book of the Dead is also often referred to as the ancient Egyptian Bible. But it is not that.
Okay.
So if you hear that, Now you wave a finger at someone and go, uh-uh.
You go, well, actually.
Uh-huh. Yep, that's what you do. And the Book of the Dead is not really a book at all. It's actually a collection of codes and spells that ancient Egyptians used to help them get into the afterlife.
Oh, like a little manual.
Mm-hmm.
I see, I see.
And the chapters are typically written in hieroglyphic script and illustrations on a roll of papyrus.
Cool. Okay, okay, interesting.
There isn't just one book. They're actually created specifically for each person who could afford one.
Okay.
Feeling a little wealth class, little class privilege situation here.
Good to know nothing's changed.
Across cultures.
That part we can all understand.
So they were created specifically for people who could afford one. So no two are the same. They're like
fingerprints. Oh, how cool is that?
And let's just take a closer look at this ancient Egyptian afterlife, because the afterlife was envisioned as a paradise.
Sure.
But you couldn't just head over there, because I think the way that we were taught things, or even if we weren't taught it, we just heard it through just living here, is that you die, and if you were good enough, you go to heaven. Bada bing, bada boom.
Yep.
But here you couldn't, there was quite an event that you had to go through first before you could end up in paradise. You had to run the gauntlet.
I'm screwed.
So picture, the worst American Ninja Warrior episode ever.
Oh, no.
Like, the floor is lava times 1,000. So there's massive caverns, fiery lakes, snakes and crocodiles lurking in the shadows, and gates manned by half-human beasts.
Oh, geez. Yeah, I'm in trouble.
So I hope in your living experience, I hope you were like working out like crazy.
Well, okay, that was actually, I was thinking that exact thought, because imagine you're at the end of your life, and if you've lived like a long, fruitful life, you're elderly. The last thing you want to be doing is like lifting weights, because you know you have to run a gauntlet as soon as you die. I mean,
or if you're me, who can't walk upstairs without my heart racing too fast, like, forget it.
Like, you'd need this code book immediately to like skip through a lot of this stuff, is what I'm imagining.
I wonder what's the, like, the Sims, like Rosebud or Motherload?
Yeah, Motherload.
What's the Motherload cheat code where you don't have to do any of this?
You just skip the whole thing. I'll save up my money for that book.
The worst part is, I don't think, this isn't in the notes, I don't think there's even like a password or code where like you get to pass. I think everyone has to do this, no matter what your like wealth was.
Wow. Okay. That's so interesting.
It sounds like everyone had to do this. And so, if you can make it through that, then you'd head to the Hall of Truth. I like how there's different, there's like the physical test.
Yeah, it's not all physical.
An integrity test. There's like a moral test. So you make it through all of these fiery lakes and things like that. And then you head to the Hall of Truth, where 42 gods will judge how you lived your life.
Oh my gosh.
I can't tolerate one person being judgmental of me. Let alone 42.
I just feel like I would be in big trouble in all of these stages.
I can't imagine. So many eyes staring at you, and like knowing that they're not going to ask you like if you like chocolate or vanilla. Like, they're going to ask you the hard-hitting, paradise questions.
Right.
So before each god, you would make what's called a negative confession. And so you would declare sins that you have not committed. So basically, if you were to go up to them and there's a list of sins, they're saying, at least I didn't do all of this. You know, does that make sense?
Yeah. So you'd go up and say, for example, like, hey, look at me, God number one. I have never, ever lied, or I have never, ever, I don't know, yelled at someone, or
right.
made somebody cry, or killed anyone.
And it was anything. It ran the gamut from like, it could be super bad or not very bad, but
you just list them out as a way to get to like the next step. Okay. Yes. Interesting.
And if somehow you pass that, you're still not through, and the moment of truth comes with the weighing of the heart.
Oh.
So again, now you've got your physical test, you've got integrity test, moral test, and then you've got like the heart test, if you're like a worthiness test, I suppose.
Your heart would be in big trouble, I think.
It would, it would fall down like a brick, I think, if we're weighing the heart. It would slam on the floor. Your heart would be weighed in the balance against the feather of Mahat.
Okay.
And it's also known as the feather of truth.
Okay.
And if your heart was lighter than the white ostrich feather, your soul would pass on toward eternal life.
Oh, boy. Well, that's quite a high bar to set. Lighter than a feather.
Mm-hmm. Uh-huh. If it was heavier, mm-hmm. your heart would be thrown on the floor and gobbled up by a monster goddess called Amit.
Oh, no.
Amit was part lion, part crocodile, and part hippopotamus.
Oh, my goodness. This is a... They're asking a lot of people.
There's quite a staff of people that are involved in helping people cross over.
Right.
Like, I feel like they are just busy, busy, busy all the time.
Not even helping people, just like preventing people.
Yeah. And that would be, if that happened to you, if your heart got gobbled up, that would be it for you. You would have what was called a second death.
Oh.
And there's no afterlife. And it's considered the worst thing that could happen.
Oh, no.
And if anyone is familiar with this, if you are a Marvel person, they just did a whole series called Moon Knight. And there was a whole episode surrounding the weighing of the heart.
Really?
Yeah. And I don't want to be the one to say like, oh, they did a great job. But I feel like it was at least a loose interpretation. So as I was reading these notes, I feel like I was able to pick up on it pretty quickly. I feel like they were trying to be as respectful as possible, but also keep it very Marvel. So who knows what that means? Here's the thing. If this sounds impossible, mm-hmm. if you're...
It does, by the way.
Yeah. If this sounds impossible and you just don't think you could get through all these steps, luckily there is a manual available to you.
Well, there you go. This is starting to sound like an infomercial you're selling me.
I just imagine like one of those like everything falling apart and they're like, there has to be another way.
Like I immediately pictured opening the cupboard and all the Tupperware falls out. You know what I mean? And it's like...
Except it's your heart and it just got gobbled
except
away.
Except my heart got gobbled up and I didn't pass the gauntlet.
Yeah, well, luckily there is a manual, which very useful. And think of it as a guidebook or a passport or a map to the underworld.
Okay.
And that's your Book of the Dead.
That's so fascinating. This part, I really didn't know all these details. I think this is so interesting.
Map to the underworld feels like... Our haunted road atlas feels like a real great value knockoff on like comparing ghosts or like anything like with the afterlife. I heard Map to the Underworld and I was like, yeah, that one sounds a lot more legit. Yeah. And like ours now feels a little icky.
No.
But anyway, I heard that and I was like, oh, I feel like we ripped off the name and I just want to say we did not. But anyway, are you ready to hear all about this manual on how to get yourself into the afterlife
I would love to.
Coming up, everything you need to navigate the land of the dead, repel the monsters, and achieve eternal bliss.
I need to know the secrets.
The floorboards creak. The walls, they moan. The house seems vacant, but you're not alone. This October, Parcast invites you to celebrate the spookiness of the Halloween season with all new episodes of Haunted Places. From an infamous murder farm in Indiana to the ghostly tombs and palaces of ancient Egypt, visit the world's most haunted destinations and find out what happens when a soul leaves the body but doesn't leave the grounds. Enjoy new episodes of Haunted Places all month long, free, and only on Spotify.
This episode is brought to you by Anytime Fitness. Forget dark alleys and cemeteries. For some, the gym is the scariest place of all, but it doesn't have to be. With a personalized plan and expert coaching, Anytime Fitness can help make the gym less frightening. Get more for your gym membership than machines. Get personalized support anytime, anywhere. Visit AnytimeFitness.com to try it for free today. Terms, conditions, and restrictions apply. See website for details.
To understand the Book of the Dead, we first need a little background on ancient Egyptian beliefs and burial practices.
Yeah, I would love to hear this. This is so also interesting.
The ancient Egyptians believed that the goal was to attain immortality in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And the afterlife is a mirror image of your human life on Earth, minus anything unpleasant.
Wait, okay, so not at all a mirror image of my life on Earth.
There's no sadness, pain, or anger, just all your favorite things and favorite people, which I guess is a more realistic version than Because in my mind, whatever heaven is, it's like, it doesn't even look like this world. But I guess this is like a more palatable.
This reminds me of The Good Place. I don't know if you've watched that show.
Yeah.
Yeah. It reminds me of The Good Place, as in it's sort of like mortal life, but only the best parts of it in a way, the concept. Yeah.
Yeah. It is something that you can at least wrap your head around versus we can fly away. And
we're
like,
on clouds and there's a harp somewhere. Yeah.
Which, by the way, doesn't really sound like somewhere I want to be anyway.
No, yeah. Not one of my favorite things, I would argue.
Unless the harp can do remixes or something. So after you die and you go to essentially The Good Place is actually
paradise,
really great analogy. After you die, you'd first have to be reanimated in the human underworld. And it's called the Duat.
Okay.
It's that terrible sounding place we described earlier.
Okay. Like the gauntlet thing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And your soul would reunite with your body. And that's why we have mummies, which is to preserve the body.
Okay.
Because your soul would need it in the next life.
I see. Okay. Keep those biceps you've been working on.
You're going to need them.
You're going to need them.
As part of the mummification process, priests removed every organ except the heart. And ancient Egyptians believed that the heart was the center of emotion, intelligence, and memory.
That's fascinating.
Yeah.
They were onto it, you know? Yeah.
The heart remains with the body for the weighing of the heart that we talked about earlier.
You got to have that on you, sure.
So the body is preserved with salt and wrapped in linen woven with charms.
Mm.
So it's a whole shebang.
Yeah.
And then they'd put a bunch of things in the tomb with the body, including amulets for protection and stuff you would need in the afterlife and your book of the dead.
Oh, that's great. So they give that to you so they place that book with you to take.
It's like a go bag. It's like,
right.
like a bug out bag.
Yeah. That's so cool. I mean, when I was at the museum the other day, they had the jars, and in each jar, they would have a different organ, and the god of that organ would be etched into the jar to protect that organ. So it would have like the intestines in one. And that's, I don't know, I just think this is all really fascinating.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Well, so they would put in with you, they would put in like stuff you would need in the afterlife.
Mm-hmm.
And the spells were meant to be spoken aloud by the mummy in its coffin.
Oh, okay.
So the spells were also referred to as utterances.
Okay. I see.
And funeral traditions, they vary depending on your wealth or status.
Yeah.
As for your Book of the Dead, someone of lesser means may have a ready-made or pre-inscribed roll of papyrus with blank spaces for their name.
Oh.
But someone who, was a real baller, they could lay out a custom one and choose their spells. So it's like their own personal map to the underworld.
Oh my gosh. They have the specially made version. I see. Okay.
Yeah.
That's really cool.
So what's in the Book of the Dead and why is it so useful?
Yeah. Tell me.
So the spells basically give the dead instructions on where to go and how to address certain gods, what to say at certain times, how to conduct themselves in the land of the dead. And there are about 200 known spells to choose from.
Wow.
Some can contain as few as 3 or 4 spells or chapters, and then others can contain over 100 spells and be over 100 feet long.
Oh, I'm like, and you got to drag that thing with you through the fiery gauntlet?
Mm-hmm.
Wow.
I also wonder, if there's a price point to these books, how much would it cost to, just get, the ultra book of...
Yeah, do you pay by word, by hieroglyph? Do you pay by spell?
Yeah.
It's interesting.
How much would it cost to just... I feel like if you can customize it and have all the spells you need, I'd be like, just in case, I should have all 200 spells.
You don't want to be there and the one that you left out is the one you need, mm-hmm. you know?
Yeah. So I don't know what that would look like or how long it would be, but probably very, very long.
I mean, 100 feet long is, to me, seems like a pretty long roll of papyrus.
Yeah. Well, so as for what kind of spells you can expect or what spells you could choose from, some of these spells include how to control your own body after death and prevent it from decay so it can be reunited with your spirit in the afterlife.
Okay, that's great.
Another is how to protect yourself from attack by the animals, insects, and knife-wielding demons in the underworld.
Okay, that buried the lead. Animals, insects, and also knife-wielding demons, by the way.
It's to really slowly, yeah. It's a gradual
insert. Don't be alarmed.
what passwords to give to the gatekeepers in the underworld. I feel like that one needs to be the very first one.
That has got to be the basic. I feel like that's like the basic.
Can you imagine if you don't have that spell and they're then like, what's the password? And you're like, I don't know. And then
I don't even know how to get past this first section. Yeah.
So then do you just stand there for the rest of time? Like what happens?
I mean, right. I don't know.
Another spell is how to answer the gods' questions in the Hall of Truth. I feel like that's super important.
Yeah, definitely.
And how to make your heart light for weighing.
That's the part I'm most nervous about.
I don't know where my heart would be. I think it'd be pretty light, but it would just not make it. Like, it would be just shy.
Wouldn't that be the pits? You get through all of that, and then your heart is just, like, a little too heavy.
It's, like, not... Yeah. Hmm. And each Book of the Dead has some standard features. Here's what they all generally have in, like, formatting, at least. They have vertical columns of hieroglyphic text written in black ink.
Sure.
They have special words written in red, like the titles of the spells or chapters and the names of deities.
Smart.
I like how they highlight the names of deities, because can you imagine if you approach one, you say the wrong name?
No, you get the wrong. Like, yeah, that's one way to lose immediately, I think.
Yeah. And then small vignettes to illustrate the spells.
Oh, cool. Okay.
And there are a few gods that star in the Book of the Dead. And among them are Anubis, who's the god of embalming.
Mm-hmm.
Ra, who's the sun god.
Right.
Thoth, who is the scribe of the gods. Mm-hmm. And who also records the weighing of the heart. And then Osiris, who is the king of the underworld and the ruler of the dead. And
oh boy.
He is the one who gives final approval to enter the afterlife. So he's the one you really got to impress.
He's the big boss. Yeah.
He's top dog.
Mm-hmm.
And the Book of the Dead dates back to the third dynasty of Egypt, which is as far back as 2670 BCE.
Wow, that's incredible.
But here's the thing, which I'm surprised by. It's changed a lot since then. I guess. With that much time, I'm sure it doesn't look exactly as it did.
Sure.
But I really thought it was going to like totally stick to how it was. But I guess it's kind of morphed over time.
Yeah, I guess that makes sense when it comes to rituals and things that people will add
their
stuff
spin on it
and put their spin on it. Yeah.
So it originated with paintings and inscriptions made directly inside the walls of pyramids, which served as tombs.
Cool.
And early pyramid texts didn't have illustrations yet, just hieroglyphs, which suggests the deceased had a high level of literacy or came from the scribal class.
Sure. Okay.
And the text gave us a view into an elite segment of the population, basically royalty.
Wow. That's fascinating.
So in the next several hundred years, the funerary text started being written inside the coffins.
Oh.
And then they showed up on papyrus rolls, linen wraps, and shrouds.
Wow. So the initial idea was, okay, once you're in your tomb and you leave your coffin, you can read all the inscriptions. But like now let's put it inside so you can read it right when you pass on and wake up.
That's like in terms of improvement on something.
Yeah.
I think that's like what a more efficient or convenient way, I guess. To,
it, like, eliminates one step, I guess, of
Definitely. The process. Like, it's right in front of your face when you're being buried.
That's so interesting.
Being buried, sorry. It's right in front of your face when they're setting everything up.
Mm-hmm.
And at some point before 1600 BCE, the spells had been divided into chapters.
Okay.
In the 500 plus years that followed, the book became more accessible and extremely popular, and no longer just for the royalty or the wealthy.
I can understand why. I mean, you would want this for anybody in your family, yourself.
Yeah, I feel like even if, I guess, even if someone had to like make up a fake one or something, like people would have bought it if they couldn't get their hands on the real thing just for like a chance at...
I imagine there's a level of comfort there in like, yeah, it gives me a better chance of passing through.
I can't imagine being someone, like, if they didn't have versions available to everybody, I would be... Imagine the fear or the anxiety or, like...
Absolutely.
What if you had, like, your friend was like, my dad has one of those books. And, like, everyone, like, huddles around. I mean, it'd be such a hot commodity. It would get stolen all the time. So
I imagine it would be very, very highly sought after.
Highly sought after. So now they have a more, I guess, general version that's available to others.
Makes sense.
People would consult scribes to make custom books for themselves, and the scribe would have to learn what kind of life the person lived so they could write out what to expect after death and what spells were needed.
So the scribe would say, I know what passwords you're going to need, that kind of thing.
Hopefully, but I also feel like if you were to give me one of these, my mom was to give me one of these, they would describe my life very differently.
That's a great point.
I feel like you have to have a personal consultation with the scribe. Like,
I would imagine.
This is what's going on.
Yeah, yeah.
In 1842, a German scholar assigned a numbering system for different spells based on one particular scroll.
Mm-hmm.
He is the one who coined the term Book of the Dead.
Okay.
And before that, ancient Egyptians knew it as the spells for going forth by day.
Oh, that's beautiful.
It's very, got
a, like that. Very poetic.
Got a flow to it, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So over time, the chapters were abbreviated and standardized and eventually replaced with new and different funerary texts.
Okay.
And it's said that the last known use of the Book of the Dead was in the first century BCE.
Wow. Wow. That was a long time, though, that this was used.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Up next, up close and personal with the magic and mind-blowing text called The Book of the Dead, how these vivid images and insights survived the ancient world.
I can't wait to hear about this. I mean, I'm just enamored with this whole concept.
It was right up your alley.
It really is.
Hola.
Hello. This call is being translated.
Abuela, listen to what my phone can do.
Abuela, escucha lo que mi teléfono puede hacer.
Wow. Ahora dime sobre tu novia nueva.
Wow. Now tell me about this new girlfriend.
Huh?
Tú sabes lo que dije.
You know what I said.
Language is no longer a barrier, thanks to Live Translate with Galaxy AI on Samsung Galaxy S24 Ultra. Learn more at Samsung.com. Samsung account login required. Calls must be made using the native Samsung dialer.
Spring is a time of renewal, so why not refresh your home with a little help from Blinds.com? Blinds.com invented a better way to shop for custom window treatments. There's no pushy salespeople in your home or inflated showroom prices. Free samples, free shipping, and our 100% satisfaction guarantee can put the spring back into your step and into your home too. Shop Blinds.com now and save up to 45%. Up to 45% off at Blinds.com. Rules and restrictions may apply.
If you wanted to lay eyes on a Book of the Dead, there are a few places you can look.
Well, tell me now.
I should just get you tickets to each place.
You
now.
Should.
The Fitzwilliam Museum in Cambridge owns several Books of the Dead, and one was for a royal official named Ramose.
Okay.
And his name and job title, he was the supervisor of royal archives.
Wow.
It's written in all the spells, so there was no mistaking who it was for.
This is Ramose's book.
I wonder if there were some versions that like had lines we could just put in the person's name. I feel like all of them maybe wanted to do that, like just to make sure that we're not sharing or like...
You're not like accidentally misplacing it else's.
Exactly. It's estimated to be on over 65 feet of papyrus scroll with very well-painted vignettes.
Beautiful.
I would love to know what these look like, the vignettes.
Well, you're about to, right? We're going to go.
Oh, right. Yes, of course. Ramose's job as a scribe himself might explain why he had such a high quality document.
That makes sense. He had the in. Like, if he didn't, I'd be like, wow, he got, you know, shafted at his own job.
I kind of wonder if that was like the job to have because you were in charge of everyone's afterlife or making it as seamless as possible.
You were helping. Yeah, yeah. I mean, that must be a big task.
Yeah.
A lot of responsibility.
And the British Museum in London has a great exhibit on Egyptian death and afterlife that includes some very fine examples of Books of the Dead. And the Getty Museum owns several Book of the Dead papyrus scrolls and some spells written on linen mummy wrappings, which like, holy crap, that's so cool.
That is so cool.
And you can look at them in the museum's online catalog, Christine.
That's what I'm certainly going to do after this.
See you never. I feel like you're just going to lose yourself in that. And the papyrus scrolls survived all this time because they were placed in tombs in the dark and usually in the desert. So there was no light or moisture to speed up decay.
It makes a lot of sense.
Many did become pretty brittle, and conservators had to use extreme care when rolling them out.
I didn't even think about rolling it out because, I mean, imagine.
It's a scroll.
Yeah, and you don't want to crack it. Oh, that must be very high stress.
I mean, think of like what we do for like our documents in this country that are only a couple hundred years old.
Yeah, good point.
Remember Nicolas Cage, the Declaration of Independence, and he was just throwing that thing around?
He was just like pouring water on it or whatever he did in that movie.
But can you imagine like a 65-foot scroll. Like, you have to roll the whole thing. The stress of that job, I couldn't handle it.
And the sweat, you couldn't sweat one drop on there, but you'd be sweating, you know? You'd
be the heavy breaths, like you have to, like, breathe upward.
Yeah.
But anyway, that is some of the, at least a very quick basic 101 on the Book of the Dead.
That's really fascinating. I mean, I knew a little bit about the, you know, conserving bodies and how that worked, and the talismans, but I really didn't know much about the Book of the Dead. So that is a new element to my knowledge here on the Egyptian afterlife. I think it's one of the most fascinating topics. Everything from that time period when I learn about it, it's just fascinating and beautiful, and I don't know, just really gets me going.
I don't think anyone who did the research on this is aware of how much Christine actually truly loves this topic. Really nailed it. Shout out once again to all the lovely people at Parcast.
Yeah, they just do it without even realizing how, maybe they do realize.
Maybe we're just so obvious in our interests.
Yeah, probably.
So do you think that this funeral tradition, or like most funeral traditions, was more for the peace of mind of the living, or do you think it was a person's own peace of mind as they ended up getting closer to death?
You know, that's a great question. I mean, I imagine it has to be both.
Me too.
You know, right? Because I feel like I'm not even just talking about ancient Egyptian rituals, but I feel like even our rituals, like speaking of, you know, me wanting to be a tree and your mom wanting to be with as many people
as possible.
Yeah, if we're talking about it, some costume jewelry or whatever she wants to be. I mean, scientifically speaking, like, we're not going to know the difference, right, in the afterlife. But, like, it makes us feel better now to think about it.
Well, also, I feel like I dig this one a little more than the rest, because with their beliefs, or with this particular belief, at least, is that you have the ability to prepare and study for the chance.
That's a great point. You know what's coming, almost.
I think it gives people, if you're talking about another person who's passed away in your life, I feel like before they passed, it gives you a lot of comfort to know, like, well, at least while you're alive, you have all this time to prep. But I guess once they've passed on, you're like, I really hope they made it. Like,
yeah. And what if they pass away untimely, you know, tragically early or something? I mean, that's it is kind of stressful. And then I guess by that same token, if you are of the mindset or belief that, you know, the traditional Christian way of thinking, that you're going to hell if you don't follow, like, the specific rules of God, you know, it's a very similar concept in that, like, not as this, but just a similar idea that you can prepare for the afterlife during your life on earth. And I mean, going on that same note, like, if someone isn't able to have the time to prepare or the money to prepare for the gauntlet, and then the modern Christian way of looking at it, say, you know, somebody who is gay and you believe that that means they're going to hell. I mean, there's elements that must be not comforting.
Yeah.
But, you know, overall, I guess you can hold on to, like,
I feel like this is almost nicer, though, because it just gives you the ability to just know, like, well, it's all about worthiness, I suppose, but it was worthiness that you could.
Great point.
You almost had, like, some control in, I guess.
It's sort of like everybody gets a shot. No matter what.
Weirdly more. I mean, they have, like, the whole duat and, like, the fiery lakes and all that, but it still feels a little more, like, inclusive.
No, I absolutely agree. And, like, sure, the part about, you know, you have to be wealthy to buy the Book of the Dead, sure, that, I mean, it rings true across, I guess, any culture.
Maybe you just have better versions of the book, but the fact that there's some general ones, like, anyone
can still
at least
get, yeah, you
kind
have
of start
a shot.
Reading up on it.
That's a great point. I mean, it's like not gatekeeping heaven, you know?
Maybe a little based on the quality of the document, but it's...
Yeah, you know. I feel like in the modern Christian way, there's, let's call it a little bit of gatekeeping there, where some people don't even get a chance in hell, so to speak, to get in there, you know, which is why I kind of turned away from that whole world.
Fair enough.
Yeah, wow.
And ancient Egyptians are often thought to be obsessed with death and the afterlife, but another way to look at it is that they're obsessed with life and eternal life. And
great point that life doesn't end, you know, when quote unquote your body dies. Yeah.
Also, if the trope is that you're obsessed with death, it's like, maybe they're just desperately preparing.
Maybe, like, they're humans. Aren't we all kind of obsessed with the
like
notion
that's
of death?
Coming. So, like, you might as well be ready for the next step.
It's like the one thing we have absolutely zero say in. So, I think we're still obsessed with death, quite frankly.
Yeah, and especially with magic was a big part of ancient Egyptian religion, where there's prayers and incantations mm-hmm. that are being used in everyday life, like during childbirth or sickness,
sure.
and people invoked the gods and goddesses. They also believed certain actions and special objects had magical power. So,
yeah, I mean, not much has changed in that way either. Obviously, much different culture and religion and all that. But, you know, you can see elements of humanity in both, like
yeah.
praying to higher powers, you know, especially in big life events and sickness.
It all feels surrounded with intention and yeah. some sort of power. Or
higher power.
Higher
yeah.
power.
Mm-hmm.
Anyway, that is the Book of the Dead for you.
Man, that's like the beauty of rituals and this whole concept and this whole podcast is like, you know, you find those elements across all different cultures and religions and centuries and
yeah.
millennia. Wow, you've set me into a tailspin here, Em.
I already know I'm not going to hear from you until Monday.
Em's already rubbing their temples like, oh my God. Oh, well, thank you for teaching me about this. I mean, I didn't know much about the Book of the Dead, so
yeah.
I've learned a lot. Thank you. Thanks so much for listening. We'll be back next week with another great episode.
Information on today's episode came from BritishMuseum.org, the BBC, WorldHistory.org, the Fitzwilliam Museum, Getty, the Egyptian Book of the Dead, a guidebook for the underworld by Tejal Gala, and the American Research Center in Egypt.
Remember to follow Rituals on Spotify to get a brand new episode every week. And you can listen to this and all other episodes of Rituals for free exclusively on Spotify.
And if you like this show, follow at Parcast on Facebook and Instagram and at Parcast Network on Twitter. You can find me at The M. Schultz.
And you can find me at Xteen Schieffer.
Thanks again for listening, and we will see you next week. Rituals is executive produced by Max Cutler and is a Spotify original from Parcast. It was created by Max Cutler.
Sound design by Kristen Acevedo, with associate sound design by Jamie Ryan. Research by Chelsea Wood.
Fact-checking by Catherine Barner. It's produced by Kristen Acevedo and Jonathan Ratliff, with production assistance by Ron Shapiro.
We're your hosts, Xteen Schieffer and Em Schultz.
Listeners, the Halloween season is upon us, and at Parcast, that means giving you more tricks, treats, and terrifying specials to sink your teeth into. On Female Criminals, revisit the complicated lives and cryptic afterlives of four infamous names in the spine-tingling series Women Who Haunt Us. On Serial Killers, Real Horror spotlights three of the most iconic horror films of all time and tells the true stories that inspired them. And on Mythical Monsters, it's the stuff of nightmares with a two-parter that brings you face-to-face with boogeymen. It's Halloween all month long on Parcast, so don't miss out. Listen to these specials for free, only on Spotify.